This is Radio Energy News.
Hello and welcome to today's evening news. I'm Brooke Mills and here are our top stories. Amid speculation, Nicola Sturgeon has confirmed her intentions for a second independence referendum.
I will now take the steps necessary to make sure that Scotland will have a choice at the end of this process. A choice of whether to follow the UK to a hard Brexit or to become an independent country.
Is this what the Scottish people want? With such high stakes, what are her chances of winning? Our politics correspondent reports. In a controversial move, the European Court of Justice has permitted employers to ban the wearing of headscarves. The freedom to display religion debate rages on. What are your thoughts? Let us know on Twitter at Radio Energy. The discussion surrounding women in golf has again today fallen into the spotlight, prior to Muirfield Golf Club in Edinburgh voting to allow women to be members. Has the time finally come to put gender issues in sport to bed? And finally today, we all know canines are a clever breed, but in a revolutionary move, Edinburgh Napier University has introduced them on a judging panel for the veterinary science course. How do prospective students feel about this? Will the dogs sniff out their pre-interview nerves? Our education correspondent finds out.
Overrooted with big smiles, and instantly everyone is trying to get the attention of the dog.
But first, here's the evening news bulletin with Luca Kenyon.
Good afternoon, I'm Luca Kenyon with today's news. Theresa May is still not saying when she will trigger Article 50, but insists it will be done by the end of the month. The bill giving her the power to do so was approved by Parliament last night. MPs rejected amendments allowing Parliament a final vote on a Brexit deal and guaranteeing rights for EU migrants, something Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn condemned in the Commons today.
The Prime Minister said she wanted to provide certainty on EU nationals as soon as possible. So then why have they voted down every Labour attempt to bring certainty?
Nicola Sturgeon says she has a cast-iron democratic mandate for holding a second Scottish independence referendum. The First Minister will put it to Holyrood next week, saying she wants Scotland's people to decide its own future after the UK voted to leave the EU. Leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Kezia Dugdale, spoke on the matter outside the Scottish Parliament earlier today.
Fundamentally, that's what matters to Scottish families who'll be going to vote in this referendum. Our country is so divided because of these referendums that we've been through. We do not want to be dragged to the arguments of the past. And the difference between Scotland raises in taxes and what we spend on our public services is £15 billion. That's how much less money we would have for our public services.
Muirfield Golf Club has voted today to allow female members. It was stripped of its rights to host the Open 3 years ago because it did not allow women to become members. Today, 80% of the club's 650 members voted to introduce membership for women at Muirfield. The decision was announced by Henry Fairweather.
The rules of the club will be changed accordingly with immediate effect, and we look forward to welcoming women as members who will enjoy and benefit from the traditions and the friendship of this remarkable club.
Three people have appeared in court charged with murder over the death of a man in an Edinburgh flat. The 41-year-old victim was found with serious injuries after police were called to a property on Gibson Terrace in Fountain Park on Sunday evening. Ambulance service personnel treated the man at the scene, but he was later pronounced dead. A crew member from a search and rescue helicopter which is missing off the west coast of Ireland has died after being pulled from the Atlantic. The search for Dara Fitzpatrick's three colleagues is still ongoing off County Mayo. The Dublin-based Sikorsky S-92, which was providing cover for another helicopter involved in an early morning rescue operation, lost contact at around 1 a.m. this morning. The EU's top court has ruled employers can ban workers from wearing visible religious symbols, including Islamic headscarves. They were asked to deliver a judgment after two women, one in France and one in Belgium, were dismissed for refusing to remove their headscarves. Employment lawyer Claire Dawson says the court decided it wasn't direct discrimination if a firm had a neutral dress code.
But they said that it could still be indirect discrimination, and in those circumstances, an employer really needs to be able to justify it because it will have a disproportionate impact on a particular group of people, such as Muslim women who wish to wear the headscarf.
French presidential candidate François Fillon is under formal investigation over alleged division of public funds. Prosecutors suspect the candidate of paying hundreds of thousands of euros to his family for work they might not have done. Until recently, he was the favourite to win the elections in April and May. He denies any wrongdoing and has previously said that he would quit the race if placed under investigation. New York and New Jersey are in states of emergency after a winter storm has swept in, bringing heavy snow. Schools have been closed and thousands of flights have been cancelled. The stormy conditions have caused German Chancellor Angela Merkel to postpone a trip to meet US President Donald Trump in Washington. BBC North America correspondent Nada Taufik is in New York City.
This is what officials are the most concerned about as the snow turns into ice and sleet and rain later, are the very dangerous road conditions. New York City has had about 1,500 plows out all day on a continuous cycle cleaning the roadway.
A 14-year-old kickboxer has died after competing in a competition final in Leeds. Scott Marsden collapsed during a national title bout and was rushed to hospital, but later died. West Yorkshire Police said officers were making inquiries into what happened, but the death was not being treated as suspicious. Leeds Martial Arts College, where the competition was held, has paid tribute to the teenager. The club says he was a true champion in every way. That's all from me. Keep up to date at en4news.com and at en4news on Twitter.
Monday was a historic day for Scotland as Nicola Sturgeon called for a second independence vote. Ms Sturgeon said she was planning the vote to be held between the autumn of 2018 and the spring of the following year. We know that we will be casting our vote again on the independence referendum, but it remains uncertain when exactly the vote will take place. Our correspondent, Lauren Walker, tries to find out what an independent Scotland future looks like in the UK would look like.
So I can confirm today that next week I will seek the authority of the Scottish Parliament to agree with the UK government the details of a Section 30 order, the procedure that will enable the Scottish Parliament to legislate for an independence referendum.
First Minister Nicola Sturgeon spoke at Bute House yesterday to get the ball rolling for the second referendum. Prime Minister Theresa May has not ruled out letting the Scots hold another independence referendum, but government sources have made it clear that she does not support Nicola Sturgeon's call for it to take place between autumn 2018 and spring 2019. The Prime Minister was subject to laughter from the opposition when she spoke today at the House of Commons, saying she wants the United Kingdom to work as a whole.
We have been working closely with devolved administrations. including the Scottish Government, listening to their proposals and recognising the many areas of common ground that we have, such as protecting workers' rights and our security from crime and terrorism.
Given that it's only been 2 years since the last referendum, which came back a no, a lot of people are wondering what has changed since 2014.
Well, I suppose the interesting change is the EU.
Liam Kirkcaldy from the Hollywood Magazine takes us through the issues that will dominate IndyRef 2.
Obviously, last time people were concerned about the likelihood of Scotland achieving EU membership. Now, clearly, there are still questions over that. No one's exactly sure how it would work, if Scotland would become a full EU member, or how quickly it would happen, whether there'd be a fast-track process. But from the SNP's point of view, or from the Yes campaign's point of view, they have one big advantage, which is that the other option is leaving completely. So it's a choice of uncertainty or certainty that probably people in Scotland are deeply concerned about.
The main focus point now is what the application of an independent Scotland to the EU would look like. Nicola Sturgeon is arguing for the second referendum because Scottish people voted to stay in the EU. But will an independent Scotland be able to stay in the EU, or will it have to join the queue for membership? Just after her announcement yesterday, the European Commission spokesperson Margarita Schrinas addressed this question.
Sur la doctrine Barroso, si ça s'applique, oui, la doctrine Barroso, ça s'applique, c'est clair.
Mr. Schrinas explained that according to the so-called Barroso Doctrine, named after the former European Commission president, a newly independent state would effectively have to make a fresh application for membership. So an independent Scotland would therefore have to apply as a non-EU country starting from zero. According to Arati Shankar, a policy analyst at Open Europe, an independent policy think tank, Scotland will face several issues when reapplying.
There are other queries about Scotland rejoining the EU should it succeed, because of course if it rejoins, then it has to adopt the euro. And if it has to adopt the euro, it has to agree to the five, it has to adhere to the five Maastricht criteria, one of which is having a national deficit below 3% of GDP, which Scotland doesn't have. It's about 9-10%.
Another obstacle Scotland will face is the attitude of Spanish politicians. Spain's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has said an independent Scotland would be at the back of the EU queue along with Serbia, Montenegro and Turkey. We spoke with Javier Carcalejos, the director of FAES Foundation, the Spanish Foundation for Analysis and Social Studies, also known as the Ideas Laboratory of the ruling party. According to him, Scotland has no right to negotiate with the European Union until it is an independent country, which according to him is not likely to happen. He said that the issue is more complicated than just Spain possibly vetoing Scotland's application to the European Union.
The question is not whether Spain would veto or not. The question is whether the European Union as a whole, international community, would accept as legitimate a process by which Scotland would become independent.
The European Court of Justice ruled today that employers may ban staff from wearing visible symbols of religion, such as headscarves. This decision is based on the cases of two women, one in France, the other in Belgium, who were both fired for wearing hijabs. According to the court, the ban must be based on internal rules of the company requiring employees to dress neutrally and not on customers' wishes. Our correspondent, Erin Brown, has more on the topic.
Today's ruling by the European Court of Justice was prompted by the case of Samira Ajbita, who was fired for wearing a headscarf to her job at the Belgian security company G4S. The ECJ said in their ruling today that an internal rule which prohibits the visible wearing of any political, philosophical, or religious sign does not constitute direct discrimination. Sky's Europe correspondent Mark Stone further explains the court's ruling.
That is key to this ruling because the European Court of Justice has said that if a company has a neutral dress code policy in place, it is not directly discriminatory to ban someone from wearing a religious symbol. And the reason for that is because it is a policy that applies to everyone.
The integration of immigrants has been featured in many debates across Europe in previous years, including the topic of Muslim dress. Austria and the German state of Bavaria recently announced bans on the full face veils in public spaces. Expert in human rights law at Robert Gordon University, Dr. Paul Arnell, said that today's court ruling is controversial and topical.
The issue of religious dress is one that's been not far from the surface over the past several years, but legally I think it's a legitimate decision, and the ECJ was applying the Equal Treatment Directive and did so and held that there wasn't discrimination in the policy in Belgium and France.
Dr. Arnell also mentioned the ECJ's ruling was not meant to target Muslims and their religious wear, but applied to all religions. He said that this law would be necessary to encourage neutrality in the workspace.
There wasn't any direct discrimination because the policy applied to all manifestations of religious and political and philosophical beliefs and opinions. So there wasn't, say, discrimination between Muslims and non-Muslims. It didn't matter if there was a headscarf at issue or a crucifix. The rules applied similarly.
With polls opening for the Dutch elections tomorrow, where Muslim immigration is a key issue, this ruling certainly comes at an interesting time.
To an average Scot, the Netherlands means orange, partying, windmills and tolerance. However, the picture is not so simple. Tomorrow, Dutch people will go to the polls to vote in the parliamentary elections. This election outcome will impact the future of not only the Netherlands, but Europe as a whole. We tasked our Dutch reporter, Suzanne Wunschenker, to give us a lowdown on Dutch politics.
This year's vote has seen an unusual amount of worldwide interest because of the unexpected increase in the popularity in the far-right Party for Freedom, led by the controversial Geert Wilders, whose views have often been compared to that of the American President Donald Trump. It has also received a lot of attention following the Netherlands' recent dispute with Turkey. Dutch politics are never a simple affair. Out of the whopping 28 parties running, the ruling Prime Minister's Party, VVD, and Wilders' Party are leading in the polls. Some of the other parties are Party for Animals and Pirate Party. The Netherlands has a different government setup than that of the UK, as it always results in a coalition. This will make it hard for the Party for Freedom to be included in the coalition, as most of the parties have vowed they will not team up with Wilders. The current Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, speaks of his worries regarding the current polls.
We are now number one in the polls, but we still have the Freedom Party just behind us, Geert Wilders. So there's still a big risk that he could come out number one. So I think that would be very bad news. I will fight very hard for my party to get out first.
The surge in popularity of Wilders' Party for Freedom is causing controversy because of its stance on issues such as Islam, refugees and the European Union. He has been known for his extreme anti-Muslim views and has referred to the Islam as an ideology opposed to a religion. Wilders has previously been banned from entering the UK in 2009 due to his hate-filled speeches, but this has since been overruled. Wilders has made some shocking comments about the Quran. Wilders proposed for the Netherlands to follow the UK's lead and leave the European Union and have a single market. If he wins and the country leaves the EU, it could cause a snowball effect on influential countries like France and Germany to also vote for far-right candidates, which would have a drastic impact on Europe as a whole.
The Quran really, for instance, if you look at anti-Semitism, has more anti-Semitism in it than, for instance, Mein Kampf, a book of another totalitarian, violent ideology. So I rather would have no Quran at all, as we, in Holland at least, have outlawed Mein Kampf as well.
Another one of his proposed objectives is to close the borders and stop refugees coming into the Netherlands with a Trump-style immigration system. Wilders was found guilty in Dutch court in 2016 of spreading hateful speech. He also described migrants from Morocco as Moroccan scum who make the streets unsafe in a December election campaign and has emphasized his desire to make the Netherlands ours again. He now lives under 24-hour police surveillance.
The European Union is a political bureaucratic organization that took away our identity and our national sovereignty. So I want to get rid of the European Union and be a nation state again.
However, the fast-growing Green Left Party is hot on the Freedom Party's heels. The Liberal Green Party leader, Jesse Klaver, is a Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau to Wilders Trump and could stop him from winning. Tension is growing in the run-up to the election following the Netherlands' fallout with Turkey. The Turkey's foreign minister was banned from entering the country when arrived to campaign for a Turkish referendum. In response, Turkey, a predominantly Muslim country, has banned the Dutch ambassador from entering the country and have suspended high-level political talks. The increased tensions are worrying for Europe as the relationship between the European Union and Turkey are vital for tackling the migrant crisis. However, there is not a clear predicted winner yet, as only one day before polls open, a staggering 54% of voters are undecided as to who they are going to vote for. The election's results will be announced on Thursday.
A man and two women have been charged with a murder following the death of a man in Edinburgh. Colin Skilbeck was found seriously injured at a flat on Gibson Terrace on Sunday night and was later pronounced dead at the scene. Although Police Scotland have not released a formal statement, the accused made their first appearance in court today. Scott Hope has more details.
It's quiet outside the Edinburgh Sheriff Court today, despite the activity going on inside. A man and two women are expected to appear here today and be charged with the murder of 41-year-old Colin Skilbeck. Mr. Skilbeck was found with serious injuries at a flat in Gibson Terrace at about 8:15 on Sunday night. He was treated by paramedics in the tenement flat, but was pronounced dead on the scene. A 36-year-old man and two women, aged 34 and 39, were detained yesterday in connection with the incident. I've spoken with a police officer outside the court, who said the accused will be appearing later today in a closed case, which means the gallery will not be open to the public as usual. The crime scene is located just opposite Bainfield, a student residence building for Edinburgh Napier University. Police officers have taped off a section of the street next to the Union Canal and sealed communal bins to be examined. Over the past week, local residents of the flats between Gibson Terrace and Newman Place reported complaints of screaming, fighting and drug dealing, raising concerns over the safety of the area, which is mostly populated by young people and students. My colleague Peter Hamill was at the scene at Bainfield and asked local students whether or not they knew about the incident and how they felt about it.
I'm currently outside the Braid Hills house of the Bainfield student accommodation for Edinburgh Napier. So do you have any idea what happened here on Sunday night?
Not really. I mean, apparently someone died, which is a little bit alarming, but we all started walking out and we were all outside the apartment building. The police had it all taped off and we just saw tactical units start to get ready to go, so we were all kind of waiting in anticipation to see what was going on.
I heard that a man died, but that's all I know.
I have just heard the news that there is a man dead here, and his body was found 2 days ago.
Do you feel concerned for your safety at all after the incident, or no?
A little bit, because that's quite terrible to find a dead body here.
Like, not really. The police was here, so
that's not the phrase.
Now, sport has evolved over the years to be inclusive and equal down to a T. However, this is not the first time the discussion about women in golf has arisen recently. Is golf still a male-dominant sport? David Roney reports.
I make my way to Muirfield, which was opened in 1891 and has hosted prestigious competitions such as the Ryder Cup and the British Open. However, today it is hosting a different event. I'm going to find out if women members can be permitted into the clubhouse.
A windy day here at Muirfield as Henry Fairweather, the club captain, gives his verdict.
The total number of votes counted is 621, a turnout of 92.7%. The number of votes for the resolution is 498, or 80.2%. The number of votes against the resolution is 123, or 19.8%. So the rules of the club will be changed accordingly with immediate effect.
Mr. Fairweather added that the women's game had been changing as of late.
Our members were quite clear that they wanted women to be treated not in any artificial way, but to go through the same admissions process as men.
I asked if the potential return of tournaments was a factor that affected the members' votes.
Well, the most important thing has been to decide what is the right thing for the future long-term interests of the club. And that has been the committee's main consideration throughout, rather than simply to retain the Open.
A member from the Royal Troon Golf Club, who voted on a similar matter last year, admitted that although there hadn't been an initial influx of female golfers, he thinks the decision will encourage more to sign up.
The profile of it has probably increased a lot in recent years because there's a lot more television coverage of it. There are some excellent female golfers out there. It's beginning to be seen to be a sport that's open to all that might have been the case in the past. And because there's a lot of good young female golfers, in a way they are role models for young women to consider taking up golf. Hard to see how it would have a wider ranging implication in sport as a whole, but it's just yet another sign or change, if you like, of sport moving in the direction of society, where things are the bastions of the establishment that might have been accepted in the past. That's no longer the case. So golf as a sport is just moving in that way, the same way as other sports have done and have had to do in the past. Maybe golf's just a bit later to come to that agenda than some other sports.
Golf is one of the oldest sports in Scotland. However, this new ruling could be the tee-off for a positive change in the women's game.
Oh, that goes down! Yes, the double fist pump for Lefty! One hand in the Claret Jug, the other on his fifth major championship. It's all come together here in Muirfield. The big hug for Bones, an emotional moment.
The introduction of the new state-of-the-art 12-sided £1 coin is coming at the end of this month to replace the old coin, which has been in existence since 1983. While this has been widely accepted as a positive change, it's proving to be a bit of a headache for Edinburgh Council. Our reporter, John Menzies, went to find out more.
Over the next few weeks, Edinburgh Council will be facing a challenge to have their pay and display machines ready for the introduction of the new £1 coin, which is set to come into circulation on the 28th of March. And between now and the 15th of October, both versions of the pound coin will be valid for use in a period known as co-circulation. But after the latter date, the old pound coin will no longer be accepted by businesses and will therefore no longer be legal tender. The reason for the introduction of a new coin is because there are becoming more and more counterfeits of the circular pound. There are thought to be more than 30 million fake round pounds in circulation, which adds up to roughly 2.5% of coins. The new pound coin is thinner, lighter and larger, and also includes a hologram-like image, which is said to make it highly secure and almost impossible to duplicate, making counterfeits highly unlikely. The Royal Mint, who have made these new pound coins, are to release 1.5 billion of them, beginning from the 28th of March. As a result of the release of a new £1 coin, Edinburgh Council are to update the software in many of their parking machines so that they are able to recognise and accept the new coins. In total, the council will need to recalibrate 816 machines to accept the new 12-sided coin. The process is expected to cost in excess of £200,000. This comes as work also gets underway to remove 371 ticket machines which have come to the end of their lifespans. As Edinburgh Council work to upgrade machines, they have been urged to keep costs down to limit the impact on road maintenance projects. However, Alex Lunn, who is an SNP councillor for the Duddingston and Craigentinney ward, feels that this software update to the machines is not such a big cost to the council.
The transport budget is obviously more than just the maintenance work that's required to be done here. It's obviously has a number of factors in it.
And this, in terms of the sort of the capital budget of the council, this is actually quite a small amount of money. It seems a lot. It's certainly more money than I'd ever earned over a 10-year period. But it's not a great deal. And it, you know, this work will need to be done, and it is an area that we as a council have no control over.
It may not burn such a big hole in the council's pocket, but it remains to be seen whether new machines with their updated software will be an inconvenience to those who use them.
It's been an exciting few days in sports. Here's Maria Graham with a roundup.
New Rangers manager Pedro Caixinha has his sights set on winning a trophy this season. Caixinha was appointed to the position at the weekend and was in the stands to watch the team's 1-1 draw with Celtic on Sunday. He's confident the club have a chance when they play Celtic in next month's Scottish Cup semi-final.
Generally, when you reach the quarterfinals of any competition, you need to think to win it. So you are in the semi-finals now, just have 2 games from the trophy. I think we go for it, for sure.
Former Rangers manager Mark Warburton has since been appointed to the new manager of Nottingham Forest, with David Weir set to join him as assistant. The pair have signed 2.5-year contracts with the English Championship team. The reasons for Warburton's departure remains unclear, with the Scottish club claiming that Warburton resigned from his position, something he denies. British Olympic champion Joanna Roswell-Shand has retired from international cycling. The 28-year-old track cyclist has won 2 Olympic golds, 5 world titles and 4 European titles. Roswell-Shand said in a statement that retiring was the hardest decision of her life, but that she has more than cycling to offer the world. One of the biggest events in the racing calendar gets underway today with the opening of the Cheltenham Festival. Top horses, jockeys and owners will be aiming to win more than £4 million in prize money, with more than 260,000 people there to watch and bet over 4 days. The most prestigious race of the festival and of the season will be the Tomiko Gold Cup, set to begin at 3:30 p.m. on the fourth and final day, Friday, March the 17th. Also at Cheltenham, a statue of retired 20-times champion jockey Sir A.P. McCoy was revealed. During his career, McCoy partnered 31 winners at the festival, including 2 victories in the Gold Cup.
I never thought at any stage when I was coming here that there would ever be a statue of me, so I'm very proud. And I'm very honoured, and for anyone that is getting their picture with this statue, a lot of my friends would say that this statue has got a lot much more personality than I have.
Superstition says if you step in dog poo with your left foot, you'll receive good luck, but when stepping with your right, bad luck will come. Now it's easier for you to decide if you need that extra luck, as park rangers are literally highlighting the increasing problem by spray painting dog dirt sparkly pink. Rangers at Holyrood Park say that the rising number of people not picking up after their dogs has prompted them to grab their paint guns. The spray paint is supposedly both eco-friendly and fabulous to look at. We sent Sebastian Pogstad to try his luck.
I'm now walking along Holyrood Park to meet up with Senior Park Ranger Jamie Hamilton, who has earlier expressed his concerns towards the increase in dog fouling.
What has happened is that over the last 3 decades, this has been a changing problem. Initially, it started off being a problem, but with the growing concerns about the environment and interest in the outdoors, we've had an increase in responsible dog ownership, resulting in people picking up after their dogs, which is great. But what has happened now is we've gone kind of over the curve now. We have people picking up after their dogs, putting them into bags and not disposing of the bags responsibly. So therein lies the issue. Yeah, now it's interesting. I looked up Anne Main's stuff, and she was advocating what we call stick and flick, whereby if you're in the countryside and there is no real concern about the dog waste, you can actually get a stick and flick it into the undergrowth. And that is what she's suggesting. Now, that's very much a solution in the countryside. Now, in a park like this is an urban park, and we have a whole range of different user groups. That's how we define them, user groups. And stick and flick doesn't really work here, I feel.
Although the action is not visible from areas seen by pedestrians at all time, areas like Hunter's Bog, where I'm standing right now, are particularly bad. This is over the first edge and therefore the most convenient but also hidden place for irresponsible dog owners to leave it.
Now, continuing on with the canine theme, it's the newest interview ploy that might make you think universities have finally gone barking mad, or have they? Edinburgh Napier's newest additions to the academic recruitment group are a team of crafty canines looking to sniff out the country's best aspiring vets. Our reporter Luke Barry talked to head interviewer Jodie Smith.
It supports an excellent applicant experience, and it gives the applicants a sense of being part of our programme community, because it's such an icebreaker and puts smiles on everyone's faces instantly when the dogs come into the room. It allows people to be themselves and not feel maybe self-conscious.
The idea behind using dogs is also to see how potential students react around animals, a key part to becoming a successful vet. But the interview panel hasn't always been so furry, with raccoons and even snakes having contributed in the vetting process at Napier Sighthill campus. This interview technique that the veterinary department have adopted not only creates a fun atmosphere, but it also helps to instantly get the best out of the interviewees.
Automatically, when you bring the dogs into the room, it increases the social interaction that goes on, so it allows applicants to perform to the best of their ability.
The dogs, Simba, Tia and Fern, are special in that they are trained to aid those on the autistic spectrum. Their hard work is always repaid, so don't feel too bad for the bunch. Jodie informed us that they have already asked for a sausage salary as a reward for the 3 days of hard work.
I mean, he did sort of mention that it would be coming directly from the butcher. So his order is to go to the butcher and he's requested several steaks and a few strings of sausages.
So were Napier the first to employ wacky interview tactics? Well, they're the first university to use such a strategy in Scotland, but they aren't the only ones to spring surprises in the interview situation. World-famous search engine Google frequently asks strange questions, such as choose a city and estimate how many piano tuners operate a business there, and if you could choose only one song to play every time you walked into a room for the rest of your life, what would it be? But for the Edinburgh Labrador's 9-to-5 is done for the time being. But with the sauces for the road and the staff lanyard back on the shelf, it's momentarily time to relax for the trio, who will soon be back out on the job training to become therapy dogs. But as for helping buddy veterinary students, there's no need for any more training.
And finally for the weather today in Edinburgh. Any isolated showers dying out with some long clear spells developing this evening. Westerly winds will gradually ease, becoming mainly light by the morning and turning chilly. You can expect a minimum temperature of 6 degrees tonight in Edinburgh. Traffic in the city tonight. The Forth Road Bridge has been closed to all traffic after a lorry overturned amid high winds. The lorry was on the northbound section of the bridge when its trailer toppled over at around 2:45 p.m. this afternoon. The bridge is shut in both directions as work goes underway to move the vehicle. Police are advertising drivers to avoid the bridge and find alternative routes. Delays are ongoing in the Gorgie Dalry area. The city-bound lane is closed due to a gas leak on Gorgie Road, and there are lane closures and three-way temporary traffic lights at Ardmill and Terrace due to ongoing cable installation. Radio Energy.